The Ohio Redistricting Commission on Friday approved a new congressional map with districts that will make it easier for Republicans to win more seats in next year's midterm elections. So what does this mean for the national effort to give the GOP an edge? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the battle over political boundaries are Case Western Reserve University Professor Emeritus of Law, Jonathan Enten, and Cincinnati Enquirer State Government Reporter, Jesse Ballmert. Welcome back, Jonathan and Jesse.
Good to be with you again.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you both here. Jesse, explain what changed with the congressional map the Ohio Redistricting Commission just adopted on Friday.
Yeah, so on Friday, the Ohio Redistricting Commission unanimously approved a bipartisan deal, which would effectively make it easier for Republicans to win in the 9th congressional district, which is Marcy Kaptur's Toledo district, and the 1st congressional district, currently represented by Greg Landsman in the Cincinnati area. And then the 13th congressional district, which is the Akron-Canton area, represented by Amelia Sykes, is getting a little bit more Democratic.
Well, Jesse, some national media outlets are calling this map a win for Republicans. You mentioned it was a bipartisan vote. How did Democrats on the Redistricting Commission explain their votes in favor of this map?
Yeah, so Democrats from the beginning of this process were negotiating from a pretty weak position. They needed both Democrats to be on board for this map to last for the next 3 election cycles. But once we reached November, Republicans could have approved a map without any Democratic votes or input. And so Democrats were pretty concerned about that. They had seen at least some inklings that Republicans would push a 13-2 Republican to Democratic district map. And so they essentially said this was the best of all their bad options.
Jonathan, what do you think? Do you see this as a win for Republicans, a win for Democrats, a win for neither?
I think it's a loss for Ohioans. Now, I'm a little leery about reading too much into the maps. You might remember that when the current map was adopted after the 2020 census, there was some thought that this map was going to produce as many as 12 Republican representatives, and it turned out to produce only 10. But this map was pretty clearly designed to help the Republicans, but as Jesse says, not as much as a more aggressive map might have helped them. But my larger point is that this map and the whole process that we have seen following the 2020 census suggests that the redistricting reforms that Ohioans adopted in advance of the last census simply aren't working.
Can you talk more about that, Jonathan? And just to clarify, Republicans now have 10 out of the 15 total seats that Ohio has in the U.S. House of Representatives. This will make it a little bit easier for them to have 12 out of that 15 based on these new lines. But talk about how this redistricting reform was supposed to work when Ohio voters approved it several years ago.
The original idea behind the reforms, both for the congressional districts and for General Assembly districts, was to encourage bipartisan cooperation in drawing the maps. Those reforms say that if you could get bipartisan support, the map would last for the rest of the decade. But if you couldn't get bipartisan support, then the map would last for only 4 of the 10 years, and then we would be back in the middle of the decade to try to draw a new map. But that process has never worked the way the proponents thought it would, maybe because the stakes of line drawing for congressional and legislative districts are perceived as being so high. So at this point, we are in a position where you have a supermajority in the legislature and a supermajority on the redistricting commission, basically saying, we will give you, the minority party, we'll give you a little bit, instead of, as Jesse said, going for everything that we could possibly extract by having things go back to the General Assembly in November. Instead, we have the redistricting commission signing off on a messy map in October, where the Democrats on the redistricting commission say, "Well, this isn't great, but it could be a lot worse." In a lot of ways, this suggests either that we ought to move to something like an independent redistricting commission, which of course the voters rejected last year, or maybe we should think more broadly about ways to reform the way we draw congressional and legislative districts across the board.
We're talking about Ohio's new congressional map and the national battle over redistricting. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Jesse, how much time did the public have to study this new map, and how did people respond to this new map during last week's meeting of the commission?
Yeah, so they didn't have very much time. And I think that's one of the criticisms of this process is it really encourages the Republican Party and the Democratic Party to make a deal not out in the open and then just kind of present it and vote on it as soon as possible. So the first time this was officially presented to the public was 4 p.m. on Thursday, and then it was voted out at 10 a.m. on Friday. Now, there were leaks of versions of the map as soon as Wednesday night, so you could kind of get a sense of what was to come, but not exactly an open, transparent process.
Jonathan, you just explained with the redistricting reforms that Ohio voters passed several years ago, the reason the Ohio Redistricting Commission had to come together this year was because it wasn't a bipartisan map that was used in the last couple of election cycles. I guess I wonder, Jonathan, how does what happened in Ohio compare with some of the redistricting that's happened in other states like Texas and Missouri?
Well, we've seen this year in particular, we've seen states which do not have in the past a or did not have an established mechanism for mid-decade redistricting going to redistricting in the middle of the decade because they think they can gain a partisan advantage. In Ohio, we're doing mid-decade redistricting because the redistricting reforms that we adopted called for mid-decade redistricting if, in fact, we couldn't get a bipartisan map. Now, part of what we're seeing in the other states is something that is virtually unprecedented. And I say virtually because Texas actually did do mid-decade redistricting around 2005 or so. For the same purpose, they wanted to maximize the number of Republican seats they could gain. But in the other states that are doing mid-decade redistricting or talking about doing mid-decade redistricting now, they've never done that before. And as I said, even in Texas, they did it once before. But there's an old saw that people talk about that the voters should be able to select their representatives, not that the representatives should be able to pick their voters. And mid-decade redistricting increases the chances that the representatives are in fact going to choose their voters. And that essentially means that the elections are somewhat of a perfunctory exercise. Indeed, we've had this conversation earlier about how the new map that the Redistricting Commission adopted last Friday increases the Republicans' chances of gaining seats in the House. But I think We should note that by focusing on who's likely to win each seat in the general election, we are effectively saying that the general election is much less important than the primary, and that tends to drive the candidates to more extreme positions. If you are in a safe Republican or a safe Democratic district, then you don't have to worry about losing in November, but you do have to worry about getting primaried if you aren't sufficiently committed to the party line. It may be difficult to draw a large number of competitive congressional districts in Ohio, but the system that we have now, just as the system that's being used in other states, tends to move in the direction of safe seats, not competitive seats. And that does make a difference in terms of what kinds of candidates win in primaries, and therefore how legislative bodies can function. Part of the reason that we're in on day 35 of the federal shutdown is because there are so few genuinely competitive congressional seats that it's really difficult to get people to sit down and negotiate for whatever arrangement might be possible so that the government can be reopened.
Jesse, I know some states with Democratic governors and legislatures are also looking to redraw their maps to kind of counteract what Republican governors and legislatures are doing. Can you talk with us about some of what's going on there?
Yeah, I think most notably California has been moving in that direction. And I think this has really just been kind of a national arms race on redistricting before the 2026 elections, because control of the U.S. House of Representatives is up in the air. Traditionally, the party in the White House has lost seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. So there has been a lot of interest from President Donald Trump and Ohio's J.D. Vance in increasing Republican seats. And you've seen Democrats responding to that in turn. So you really have seen, people using whatever advantages they can politically to increase seats and the likelihood that they will be able to control the U.S. House of Representatives.
Well, we will continue this conversation after a short break. Then later in the program, Thurgood Marshall surprised her when he used her strategy to argue Brown versus Board of Education. Have you heard of Pauli Murray? This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about Ohio's new congressional map and the nationwide battle over political boundaries. My guests are Case Western Reserve University Professor Emeritus of Law Jonathan Enten and Cincinnati Inquirer State Government Reporter Jesse Balmert. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Jonathan, before our break, we were talking about how these states that are controlled by Republicans have been drawing maps or redrawing maps to give Republicans more of an advantage. States controlled by Democrats are trying to do the same to kind of counteract that. I read one political observer who said this whole effort to change the maps before next year's midterm elections was, quote, an existential threat, end quote. What do you think? Is it an existential threat to have all this happening?
Well, I'm not quite sure what an existential threat means, but I will say I think that this is a terrible development if we are trying to come up with a system for a workable government. All of this maneuvering, whoever started it, and there's obviously a Republican history and a Democratic history, but the public will be the losers. As I said, the way this process is playing out, where people are trying to maximize the number of safe seats, means that the general election, it becomes much less relevant in the overwhelming majority of districts because everybody knows that either a Republican is going to win in a safe Republican district or a Democrat is going to win in a safe Democratic district. Now, this is aggravated by the greater polarization of the parties. There just isn't much philosophical or ideological overlap between the parties. And so what this means is you get people elected who have to worry only about getting primaried for being insufficiently rigidly partisan. And we wind up getting really bad policy or no policy at all. The fact that there are apparently no meaningful discussions going on in Washington right now because there's nobody to talk to, means that the public is the losers. It's not just SNAP benefits or Head Start, it's or air traffic control. It's virtually everything the government does. People are already discouraged about the functioning of government, and these kinds of games simply reinforce that kind of public cynicism or despair or frustration or whatever you want to call it. So, is that an existential crisis? I'll leave that to other people to decide, but it's a terrible place to be.
We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Elizabeth. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Okay. I was just, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I think the fairest system would be one similar to what they have in Europe, which is no districts, and it's just the top vote getters get the positions, regardless of whether they're in Columbus, Cincinnati, out in the boonies, or wherever. You know, the top two vote getters statewide get Senate. Top 8 or 12 or however many reps we have get the representative because they're going to Washington to make national law that's going to affect the whole state statewide.
Really
That's my
interesting.
comment.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'll take that off the air.
Thanks, Elizabeth. What do you think about that, Jonathan? It's a very different system than what we have now in the U.S.
Well, I'm not entirely sure that all of the European countries are elect their parliamentarians at large. Some do, but one big challenge with a system like that is that if I'm an Ohioan, I would have to vote for 15 people for the House of Representatives. And it might be really hard for people to have any meaningful sense about, well, who are these, how do I evaluate these folks? Now, in some European countries, there is a party list. So the leader is number one, and you go down the list in terms of priority. So you wind up voting by party. But if we went to a system like that, we might have other kinds of consequences or other kinds of implications. For example, most of the European nations that have systems like this have more than two political parties. And so one of the things that happens is after the votes are cast, and you figure out how many seats each of the parties gets under the system, then you have a complicated negotiation to produce a majority government. The other thing to keep in mind is that in these countries have parliamentary systems, and those work quite differently from the American system. This might be an interesting way to think about it, but I think that it's not so simple just to say, oh, we're just going to vote for party slates. There are going to be lots of complexities that we'd have to think about and work through. So I'm not sure in the short term that this would solve the problems that we're facing right now.
Let me ask you this, Jonathan. You mentioned that Texas had a mid-decade redistricting back in 2005, you said, but has there ever been a push like this from a president to redraw maps between the traditional decade redistricting cycles?
Not that I'm aware of. And this does seem to be driven, straight out of the White House.
And Jesse, I've seen National Republican Party leaders quoted as saying the GOP began this redistricting effort to counteract lawsuits that Democrats around the country have been filing to have maps redrawn. So who started this? Did Democrats start this? Did Republicans start this?
Well, really, gerrymandering has been around since practically the origin of our country. The name gerrymandering goes back to a governor about 200 years ago. And so this is a very longstanding, very political process. And I think even when you have conversations about it in Ohio, we look back at opportunities where Ohio Democrats could have reformed the system and didn't. More than a decade ago. And so you get into these conversations, but certainly both parties have had their share of their blame.
So Jesse, for Ohio's newly drawn first congressional district, Republicans now have a 6-point advantage. How big of a challenge will that be for Congressman Greg Landsman? Is there any way to know that at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think Greg Landsman is well known in the district and has performed pretty well. It will depend on the type of year Democrats have in Ohio. For example, this district probably would have been closer to like a 3-point Republican district in the 2024 election. If 2026 is a good year for Democrats, like we said, traditionally, the party in the White House does less well. In the midterm elections, then this is certainly a district that he could win. But what you saw was places like Blue Ash and Kenwood and kind of like suburbs directly north of Cincinnati being removed from his district, now included in the 8th congressional district. And then the 1st congressional district will now include Clinton County, which is a very pro-Republican, pro-Trump county. And so you see the ways that this district was changed to try to give Republicans more of a shot.
Jonathan, you were talking about the implications for voters in terms of these primary elections and the focus on the primaries and the, you know, extremes, the partisan extremes that can come out in that. But what about, do we have any idea how many people will now be in a different congressional district than they were in the last election cycle? Just the impact of that.
I don't know the precise numbers, but that's another sort of problem. If your congressional district boundaries keep changing, then you don't develop a kind of connection to a district. I mean, I've been in two different congressional districts in this decade I was originally in the 4th district, and now I think I'm in the 7th district. I'm not sure, but the lines were changed, and that means that, you know, you have voters, a fair number of voters, whatever the precise numbers, who aren't sure which representative to contact if they have a problem, or which representative to contact if they are trying to persuade the representative to vote for or against some piece of legislation. I mean, the idea is that members of Congress are supposed to represent us. But if we attenuate the connection, if we break that connection between the representative and the voter, then that part of the system gets undermined and results in worse government and worse representation than we would otherwise have.
Jonathan, do you think this could become standard practice for whichever party holds the presidency? I mean, the way President Trump has encouraged this mid-decade redistricting, do you think this could become a standard kind of thing that happens?
Well, it could, although how likely that is might relate to how effective this maneuvering is. I mean, if the Republicans retain control of the House as a result of a lot of this maneuvering, that will encourage not only Republican presidents to push for mid-decade redistricting in the 30s, it might encourage Democratic presidents to push for mid-decade redistricting because it might seem as though this sort of thing works. If it doesn't work, if the Democrats manage to retain control of the House despite all of these efforts, and maybe if the maneuverings in Democratic states like California don't seem to have made that much difference, then maybe the pressure to keep doing this will be reduced. But one of the problems that we face is that politicians tend to keep doing what they think is good for them. And if they think that this kind of mid-decade maneuvering is good for them, they'll keep doing it. If they think that it's not such a great thing and there is enough public pushback, then maybe they'll back off a little bit.
Jesse, we just got a call from David. We're almost out of time for this, but he says both parties create these contorted districts. Could there be limits set on the ways communities are divided up, the number of segments or corners of a district and of district's geography, kind of where these districts are pulled from?
Yeah, so we're operating from a set of rules that voters approved in 2018 as part of anti-gerrymandering redistricting reform. And one of those key changes kept the city of Cincinnati together in one district. As all of your listeners will remember, the first and the second district between Winthrop and Shabbat used to divide Cincinnati in two. And so the 2018 reforms are preventing things like that from happening. But could there be more rules? Could there be more restrictions on what the map makers can and cannot do? I think that's certainly something that would require a constitutional amendment.
Well, I've been talking with Case Western Reserve University Professor Emeritus of Law Jonathan Enten and Cincinnati Inquirer State Government Reporter Jesse Balmer. Thank you both so much for your time today and for your insights. We sure appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Up next, a choral performance celebrates the life and legacy of civil rights pioneer Pauli Murray. This is Cincinnati Edition.